and belling up to the 9-foot homemade oak bar. My name is Craig Toth, your host of Minor League News and Brews, talking about everything around the Pirates minor league system, and no beer reviews at the end of this show because it is a special edition. Paul Skeens getting called up. It's been a whirlwind pretty much since about Sunday afternoon. Got a famous guy here. His voice has been heard all over Pirates X after making a call of a player, you know, stepping off the mound and high-fiving his teammates, tipping his cap. Jack McMullen, one of the voices over there for the Indianapolis Indians, return guest. Jack, how you doing today, brother?
I'm good, man. I'm not going to say I'm tired because this is like an adrenaline rush of this happening this week, but you're right. It's been a long bit. We're talking on Thursday at 11:40. I mean, Skeens popped off the mound. Oh, what time? It was a 1:35 first pitch on Sunday. He was probably done around 2:45, 3 o'clock. Since 2:45, 3 o'clock, I mean, I haven't been able to put my phone down. And that was Sunday afternoon. And here we are on Thursday morning. And I'm like, okay, so it happened finally. And now it's all the ripple effect. Like, oh, what are we going to see on Saturday? Well, you know, I know, Craig, you've done your due diligence and you've been watching the telecasts and all that. But you're going to see some awesome stuff, man.
Yeah, and basically, I mean, as soon as this happened, I was driving, I told you this beforehand, driving to my son's Little League game, buying tickets. The prices of tickets exploded. I'm glad that I jumped on when I did, because the tickets that I bought an overprice of around $35 a piece are now up to, I believe, $75 or $80 a piece at this point in time. Every person in Pittsburgh is going to be checking the weather forecast, calling for a rainy day on Saturday. Hopefully that breaks and the sun, you know, the skies part and there's sun at 4:05. But yeah, I mean, basically, you and Howard were on there and, you know, he's coming off the mound, tipping his cap. And I had kind of texted you yesterday morning just to basically say, this is like one of the first times that I feel like people were watching a minor league broadcast and not realizing, you know, this is kind of, you know, what you guys are talking through. Like anytime a guy comes off the mound and people were reading into your words and parsing, you know, what you were saying. And I was just like, I mean, that's just kind of a normal baseball call. I mean,
yeah. So I really appreciated the message you sent, because I read all the, I was reading the replies to, you know, the video that was put out of our words. And, you know, I was just thinking, like, you know, we read the same stuff you guys do. Like, I'm sitting here reading Mackey's column, just like you guys are. I ingest all the same information that everybody does in Pittsburgh. And, you know, like at the end of the day, I had no idea. Howard had no idea. Nobody had any idea in Indianapolis that it was going to be his last start in Indianapolis. But what I will tell you is, like, we had a feeling because of what was written and what was being talked about. And at the end of the day, man, like, that guy deserved his flowers. So he's popping off the hill at the end of his start. And I mean, Howard hit it spot on. Like, we were applauding and Victory Field was applauding what that guy has done in his, what, 27 and a third innings in AAA baseball. It's been utterly insane. He just worked off 4 days rest. It felt like that was one of the final boxes that he needed to check. And I know that boxes checked is something that is getting under Pirates fan skin at this point. But, like, man, I thought the crowd in Indy did such a tremendous job acknowledging who he was. And the fans, like, they read the same stuff too. So we just wanted to do our part in acknowledging who this guy is, who this guy has been for minor league baseball, really. I mean, every single game he's done has been the free game of the day on MILB TV. And, you know, it's being pushed out to MLB TV and all that. He was so fun to watch. And, you know, we just wanted to give him the golf clap as he was popping off.
Yeah. And basically, I mean, I don't think anybody really knew. And it sounds like, I mean, basically with the stuff that's coming out right now, that the Pirates, you know, maybe had an idea and that was kind of like in the plans, but it's been spoken about that he needed to, you know, kind of throw that bullpen session, see how he would feel after that. I mean, as everybody knows, they've listened to my podcast, which is now outdated and completely wrong at this point in time. But basically, I was operating off of the information that was kind of being fed to me, as I had heard that, you know, it wasn't likely to happen, and then got a text like that next morning after the podcast had dropped and said, it's definitely a possibility. And then it must have been pretty soon after that session was thrown that had gotten the text. Obviously not from you. Everybody was, you know, questioning whether it was that. And I was like, no, me and Jack were just kind of joking around earlier on in the morning. But I know I got a text and basically said, no, he's coming up. And I didn't break it then and there. And I was just basically like, okay, I'm going to eat crow. Before we hopped on here, we talked about the fact that, you know, he really didn't have anything else to prove baseball wise. I still felt that it was a feeling that he would stay down there and could be a good way to stay down there to May to manage those innings. Because I mean, he did throw, what was it? Almost like, I think it's around 130 innings between his time in LSU and the minimal time he did there. So how much he's going to be bumped up. He's a big man though. So, I mean, he might be able to have that. It's not like when he's throwing that 100 plus mile per hour fastball, it looks like he's exerting much effort on that. But I mean, that's water under the bridge at this point in time. Like, he's coming up. We're going to see how they do that right now. But the big thing for me about Paul Skeens is that there was, like, you're talking about boxes to check. I mean, we know about the fastball. We know about the slider. But let's talk about some of the other pitches that he's added, you know, since coming into the Pirate system, because that was something that people were saying, oh, well, he needs to, you know, add these pitches, or he needs to change his shape, or he needs to work on different types of stuff. And people was like, oh, no, he's major league ready right now as soon as he was drafted. But he has added to that repertoire.
Yeah, he totally has. And I think that's a great point that you bring up. And I made the point, I kind of did like an Arsenal breakdown on the Just Baseball show for today's episode. And really what I said is, you know, yeah, you can consider him a 2.5 pitch pitcher, but last year at LSU, he was a 2.5 pitch pitcher. He was a four seamer. He really didn't use this splinker much, this splitter sinker hybrid much. And, you know, he was really just fastball slider. He would occasionally mix in a changeup. I think there are two templates and then a changeup that falls outside of those two templates. So what I mean by template is he's got a fastball template. One of them is the 101-102 that gets everybody going, and it's clipped all the time. The second pitch in the fastball template is this high-speed splitter that he throws that sits about 94-95. We'll run it up to 96-97, and that's a pitch that I talked to Paul about. I talked to Grant Cook, his catcher in Indianapolis, about, and you know, they stressed the importance in the 0-0 ground ball, the 0-1 ground ball. And 101 is not going to do that. And the point that I made on the Just Baseball show this morning was like, okay, great. If he's throwing 101, what's the goal there? If you're racking up the punch outs, what's the goal for innings accumulation within a given start? If you're trying to strike out 20 guys, you're going to last, what, 7 innings? Like, you're not going to go very, very deep, because you're going to start missing upstairs and you're going to miss bats and you're going to be forced to throw more pitches on a per inning basis. Paul Skeens goes on the mound with every intention of being there for the final out. And in order to do that, you need to get outs early in counts. And that's what that splitter sinker can do. So those are the two pitches that fall into the fastball template. The slider template, he's got a cutter-ish type slider, and he's got a sweepy slider. So you've got two sliders within that slider template, two fastballs within the fastball template, and a changeup that has looked good when he's thrown it sporadically in AAA so far this year. So we're talking about a guy that has made the move from 2.5 pitches to 4.5, 5 pitches. And that is a different arm that we're seeing, you know, even compared to his run in Omaha last year.
Yeah, and that's like some of the stuff that he had to work through. And your point is taken, as people were, you know, getting frustrated when he was getting pulled after like 3 1/3 innings, but you saw his pitch count going up because, yeah, the strikeouts were nice, but, you know, even like in Jared Jones, I mean, people were using that as kind of like that cookie cutter thing that, I mean, he went 5 innings, but he was, you know, he had those 7 strikeouts or whatever it may be, but he was already up to like 69 pitches, and how much further, you know, or 59 pitches, how much further would he be able to go in that game? And that's like a person developing from a thrower into a pitcher. And I always bring up, you know, Mitch Keller with that. When Mitch Keller came back that one year and was throwing, you know, over 100 miles per hour, it wasn't that piece of his game that made him the pitcher that he is today. It was learning that sometimes if it's just like, if I can have like this short, like 6-8 pitch inning after I've had like, you know, a 20 to 25 pitch, like marathon of an inning, but I got a bunch of strikeouts, sometimes that needs to happen. Because like you said, if not, you're not lasting, you know, past the 7th inning, you're not looking at the 8th inning. Especially as his, you know, pitch count, his innings count will be continued to be monitored through the end of this year.
Yeah, he's going to throw multiple complete games in a season for the Pittsburgh Pirates. And that is totally a lost art, but he's going to do it because he wants to. And like what we've learned about Paul Skeens in the last year and change is anything he wants to do, he will do. And I think that's as exciting as it gets. And he's going to do it with the 8 pitch inning, where 6 of the 8 pitches are that sinker that he's throwing. I think Keller is a great comp to that, because it was awesome to see the tread video. But what we saw in the tread video is not the best version of Mitch Keller. We saw the best version of Mitch Keller earlier this week when he threw a complete game. And he's a sinker slider guy now, man. Like you have to acknowledge that. Like sometimes 15 punch outs are not the mark of an elite starting pitcher. And I think that Skeens is going to give you the best of both worlds. I think there are going to be outings where he racks up 10, 15 strikeouts, but there are also going to be outings where he goes 8 innings of 1-run ball and he punches out 7. That's okay, because he's getting a lot of contact early in outs. And if the Pirate or early in counts, and if the Pirates can win that game 2-1, that's all he wants to do. He just wants to win games for the Pittsburgh Pirates, and whatever that may look like, given the certain day, is what it's going to look like.
Yeah. I mean, ground outs aren't sexy. I mean, it's like chicks dig the long ball and they dig the pitching ninja videos. But in the end, like what is going to extend your career, what's going to extend the game is going to be those little things where you get a guy after you've maybe walked somebody and they ground into a double play, or just the force out at second. Do you know, just those little things that are going to get him into games. And like we've talked about, is everybody is going to be talking over ad nauseum for the next few days of what, you know, Paul Skeens' first outing is going to look like. And I think it's going to be very, very exciting. But for me, it's going to be like, okay, what is the second outing, the third outing, the fourth outing going to look like? Because, I mean, he can rise to this moment. I mean, we've already seen, but it's going to be like kind of what happened after this. The other piece of this is that, I mean, it's the elephant in the room. It's what some people are still harping on, is that, you know, where is this offense going to come from to back it up? Because, I mean, in our conversation, we were talking about how, you know, you sent me something that, you know, Noah Hyles had put out that in 19.1 innings for Quinn Priester, even though he struggled at times, he's not getting any run support. We saw Jared Jones, you know, throw into the 7th inning, and he is, you know, at 10 strikeouts, 1 walk, and he's in line for a no decision. So that's where, I mean, not that this doesn't matter. I mean, I'm going to enjoy this. It's very exciting. For but sure. In the back of my mind, as a Pirates fan, I'm just like, okay, where is the run support coming from?
Right. And you're going to, you know, say to yourself on Saturday, you know, like the devil on your shoulder saying like, are we really going to lose this game 1-0? Like all of that buildup, and if he rises to the moment, they lose 1-0 to the Cubs. Like it feels like you're pouring water on the fire immediately. That's a great question. I will just kind of give you like the TLDR on, you know, a couple of guys. Nick Gonzalez looks like a new bat than he was last year. And I think that is the concern for a lot of Pirates fans because they got an extended look at him. He lost his prospect status last year. He was up for a long enough time and he struggled at the major league level. But I will tell you, even before he got up, Nick showed certain flaws last year. And, you know, I've talked to Nick, I've talked to the hitting coach in Indianapolis, Eric Munson, and they love where they're at in terms of offensive profile, in terms of who Nick Gonzalez is as a hitter. Before he went up to the big club last year, he was pull side a lot. Yeah, he was driving some balls, but he was pull side on the ground and he was swinging and missing. I think that's what you saw at the major league level too, right? He was pulling a lot and he was swinging and missing. He comes back down to Indy, and after he was optioned, he was hammering balls all to the opposite field. There was like nothing going pull side. And it's like, okay, great, but like, let's see that power eat a little bit. Let's see you go 415, 420 down the left field line. You have that in the tank. This year, you've seen both. You've seen 106 to the pull side. You've seen 104 to right center. And that is such an important development for Nick Gonzalez. And you're going to see a better version of Nick Gonzalez this year when he eventually gets up than what you saw last year. Two other guys, Jiwon Bae looks the part. Bae, I think, can just be that spark in the leadoff spot if you want him. But I know he struggled for the full season last year. We'll see what he looks like back up there. And then Jake Lamb, man, I mean, if you need, you know, a shot in the rear end at first base, like, he's the guy. He's hitting 400 at this point. So, yeah, I think those are the three guys that jump out. And it's like, hey, why not just give him a shot?
Yeah, and the piece of this is that, I mean, something we talked about before we hopped on is like, what else do you have to prove at AAA? I'm going with Jiwon Bae first. I mean, Jiwon Bae, anytime he's in AAA, he hits. I mean, at some point in time, it's going to be, you know, can you do that at the major league level? Last year, you know, with an injury kind of slowing him down a little bit. With Nick Gonzalez, I mean, I know there's those underlying metrics and it's that stuff that people always bring up is like, you know, the off-speed pitches, a little bit of the chase. But I mean, when you're hitting almost 400, when your OPS is over 1,000 and you walked, like I said, people may stop watching. Please don't stop watching the minor league games because I watched the minor league game last night because the major league game was on during the day. So last night before I laid down, I watched the you know, the minor league game and Nick Gonzalez walks three times. I mean, the strikeouts are down, the walks are up, and yes, he may still have some of those issues at the major league level, but I mean, it's not much of a small sample size anymore. Once you're over 100 plate appearances, that small sample size type of thing goes away and he's hitting well. I mean, Jake Lamb, he's not the same player he was when he was 25, 26, when he was with Arizona. But also, I mean, how long can you let him sit there in AAA when I know that Rowdy, and I even said this on the show this past week, is Rowdy's actually been one of your best hitters over the past week. But when that average and you're going into like the second week of May here is still sitting low, and especially that slugging is down below 600, I don't know how long you can kind of let that go. So, yeah, I mean, yes, it's great with Paul Skeens, but at some point you have to inject a little bit of a spark into that offense.
Yeah, you're speaking of it like a true Pirates fan right now. It's like, okay, yes, yeah, Skeens is great. Best pitching prospect of the generation is great. But what about the offense? Like, we're always looking at the weakness. And listen, I'm totally with you. And it has been, I'm sure, for that pitching staff, frustrating. And I'm sure for Derek Shelton too, very frustrating because they're getting good performances. Like until last time out, Martin Perez was shoving, man. And Keller just bounced back. Keller was the runt of the litter first five times through, and he drops a complete game on us in start six or start seven, whichever it was. So yeah, like I think Pirates fans were expecting this year to be the opening of the window. And it's tough to look at this offense and say, this is the lineup we're putting out when the window opens. it's probably not the lineup that they're putting out when the window opens. But if the window opens in 25, great. If the window opens at the deadline, great. And like, there may just be, you know, ways internally to figure it out. There may also be ways externally to figure it out. And the rotation looks awesome. They've got the best minor league stable of pitching in baseball, I think. The Mets are off to a great start with guys like Christian Scott and Vassell and Jonah Tong and Tidwell. Like, it's great. But the Pirates kind of have that established with Skeens, with Jones, with Chandler, Solomito. Even if you add Priester into the fold, Harrington is on a rehab right now. Like, they have so much at their disposal, and they're kind of lacking that organizational depth offensively. So when do you start shuffling assets around is the big question.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a lot. And I know that people are going to get on me about not asking about Henry Davis. I'm going to give him some time to cook down there. Believe that's something that, you know, he's had six at bats at this point in time back down in Indianapolis. So all that means, Jack, is you're going to have to jump back on the show here at some point in time. I always appreciate I shoot you a text. I shoot you a message on X. We make it happen. We will make it happen again. But for those of you that don't, I mean, you already should go follow Jack McMullen, go follow the Indianapolis Indians, go follow Just Baseball Media, what you and Aram are doing over there. I will say I enjoy that exponentially. The call up pod, everything. I mean, so go listen to that type of stuff as well. And like I said, can't wait to do this again, brother.
I love it, man. Listen, my girlfriend's in Milwaukee. We're long distance right now. I'm living alone. I have all the time in the world to jump on. So you shoot me a message and I'm around, man.
Yeah, sounds good, brother. Are you a fan of the Pittsburgh Pirates and supporting small businesses? If so, Bucks in the Basement has you covered. Introducing the Bucks in the Basement Vouch Store, with products from places like Split Rock Coffee, Coffee with a Purpose, established, owned, and operated by disabled veterans sworn to protect America, or Camp Craft Cocktails, more than cocktails. It's a mission to build longer tables where everyone is welcome. We try and vouch for these products. Bucks in the Basement, proudly brought to you by Vouch. Visit our Vouch store at bucksinthebasement.com or simply click on the link in the show notes. This week's top five Pirates prospect performers got a little bit messed up. But for a good reason, with the promotion of Nick Gonzalez to the big league club, Jack McMullen and myself just got done talking about that, recorded that on Thursday, recording this on Friday, so had to make a little bit of a change. As always, in no particular order, number one, Michael Kennedy down in Bradenton. Gets pointed out a lot, but I don't think people really understand how special this kid is. 19 years old for the entire 2024 season, doesn't turn 20 until the end of November. During his last start, 6 innings pitched, 71 pitches, 52 for strikes, 8 Ks, 0 walks. That is 16 innings pitched, his last 3 starts without a walk. On the season, a 3.13 ERA, a 1.044 whip, 30 Ks, 3 base on balls in 23 innings pitched. Number two, 20-year-old Omar Alfonso signed for $150,000 in August of 2019 through 99 plate appearances. I know people are going to say the numbers are not that great. Thinking about a 20-year-old kid playing in Bradenton, though, 247, 354, 388, good for a 742 OPS, two home runs, six doubles. This kid is heating up and also is throwing out would-be base stealers at 35% clip. And he's playing a little bit of first base. I also looked into this a little bit during this past offseason. At only 19 years old, he was playing in the Venezuelan Winter League. Batted 269, 406, 423, six walks, five Ks. I mean, this kid is really doing good things down there in Bradenton. A fellow Marauder, Esmerlin Valdez. He's a guy that when I was writing, wrote a lot about last year and the stuff he was doing down in the FCL. Got a little bit of a cup of coffee in Bradenton, struggled a little bit. This year, not really struggling too much at all. Threw 104 plate appearances, slashing 271. 385, 447, three home runs, six doubles, playing right field, left field, first base. First base is something that has been a great need for the Pittsburgh Pirates for a while. Guy's a little bit far away, but good to see him performing. Number four, Nick Cimillo, the quote-unquote catcher from Rutgers, drafted last year in the 16th round, $100,000 signing bonus, has only played first base and DH thus far for the Greensboro Grasshoppers. Last year in Bradenton, 197 plate appearances, slash 288, 406, 546 with eight home runs. So far in Greensboro, very, very small sample size, 35 plate appearances, slashing 367, 429, 633 with two home runs. And at the top, kind of maybe stretching this or cheating this a little bit, not really a prospect anymore, but a guy who is performing down in the minor leagues. This would have been the spot for Nick Gonzalez. So this one going to G1 Bay. G1 Bay was a little bit of a spark plug at the beginning of the year for the big league club. Across 371 plate appearances in 2023, slash 231, 296, 311, two home runs, 24 stolen bases, a lot of those coming in the first few months of the season, nine caught stealing, was dealing with, I believe, a hip pointer at the beginning of the season, didn't get to start the season with Indianapolis. Now he's there, 88 plate appearances, slashing 375, 483, 542, two home runs, six stolen bases, three home runs, three doubles, five RBIs in the game last night on Thursday. He's a guy that when we're talking about things, not really sure, you know, what else he can prove as far as the bat goes down in AAA. Kind of a man in some ways without a position, playing center field right now. Came up through the system as a middle infielder, primarily second base. Not great defensively there. Learning the center field position is your prototypical, probably, you know, leadoff hitter, something that I believe myself and Chris talked a lot about last year, but I'm going to see him up here, I believe, at some point this year. You would have to, but until then, he is probably going to find himself on this list more often than not.
A pitcher of beer, a pitcher of beer, let's order another pitcher of beer. That pitcher of beer should come over here. I love that pitcher of beer.
As I believe I said last week, I've got my my brews lined up for, let's see, the next 1, 2, 3 weeks. So don't even really have to taste any beers. Can take some time off for at least a little bit here till the end of May. The first beer is the Garage Beer. Classic lime. My wife wanted to try this. Her and my brother-in-law are big Bud Light Lime fans. So tried the Garage Beer. Classic lime coming in at 4%. And it is exactly what it said. It's a good summer beer, garage beer, grilling beer. I grill right outside my garage door. So this is a good one. Give that one a 375. Knock it down to 350. The Brew Gentleman. Blood Light Lime. And like I said, they like the Bud Light Lime, so I had to try the Blood Light Lime. An American IPA coming in at 6%. Give this one a 450. Knock it down to 425. Going along the lime theme, while I was at the Pirates game a few weeks ago, I tried the Cinderlands Beer Company. Little Cinder Lime coming in at 4.2%. Give this one a 425, knock it down to 400. Gonna have to try it outside of the game because beers always taste better at the ball game. And finally, the fourth beer for this week, the Passion Fruit Yinzerade. And that is a sour fruit beer. Give that one a 350. Knock that one up to 400, and that one is also from Cinderlands Beer Company. It's kind of like a Yinzerita maybe in some ways, but definitely not a bad tasting beer. Not my type of beer. I'm not a sour drinker at all. Got a little bit of a bump on the weighted based on batting average. But until next time, everybody, let's go Indians. Let's go Curve. Let's go Hoppers. Let's go Bradenton Marauders, and let's go FCL Pirates.